This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. For nearly 50 years, Truman Capote's In Cold Blood has stood as perhaps the best of the true crime genre. Capote's book chronicles the grisly murder of Mr. and Mrs. Clutter and two of their four children in Holcomb, Kansas. The book is such a cultural touchstone, it's been adapted into an opera, a graphic novel, two punk songs, a TV miniseries, and most notably, three films. Here's Philip Seymour Hoffman as Capote.
Until one morning in mid-November 1959, few Americans, in fact few Kansans, had ever heard of Holcomb. Like the waters of the Arkansas River, like the motorists on the highway, exceptional happenings never stopped there.
Last week, the Wall Street Journal reported on decades-old documents that have recently come to light, which point to significant fabrications in two chapters of Capote's masterwork, including one of its most thrilling moments. Wall Street Journal reporter Kevin Heliker says that in Capote's telling, the Kansas Bureau of Investigation acted immediately after getting a tip from a convict who shared a prison cell with one of the killers.
It begins with an inmate named Floyd Wells coming forth and telling his warden who killed the Clutter family. The warden immediately picks up the phone and calls the KBI. The chief detective is Alvin Dewey. That very day, Capote says, Dewey comes home and shows his wife the mugshots and the rap sheets for these two suspects and indicates that this is it, the case is solved. What the KBI files show is that actually 5 days passed between Floyd Wells coming forth with the names and the KBI showing up at the Hickok farm, which was the last known whereabouts of suspect Richard Hickok. And what's really fascinating, given how much time has passed, is that there is one witness who can explain that five-day gap. And that is the gentleman who prosecuted the case, Dwayne West, who's 81 years old. His memory of this is very sharp. He was in the sheriff's office that morning, and when it was announced that morning that a prisoner at Kansas State Penitentiary named Richard Hickok and Perry Smith, Alvin Dewey said, "It's not them."
Capote's hero.
Capote's hero.
Can you describe the relationship between Alvin Dewey and Truman Capote?
The letters of Truman Capote on file at the New York Public Library show Truman asking for all manner of information from Alvin Dewey, including the diary of 16-year-old Nancy Clutter, her last entry logged only moments before Smith and Hickok murdered the entire family.
You're saying that Dewey gave Capote access to that diary without her family's
consent?
Without
her family's consent. According to Detective Harold Nye, Alvin Dewey gave Capote access to the entire KBI file, and that if this had become public, that Dewey would have been fired. And Capote's letters are just rich with gratitude to Dewey. He called him Foxy. Bless you, Foxy, for this. Bless you for that. The original contract between Truman Capote and Columbia Pictures for the movie rights requires that Columbia hire Marie Dewey, Alvin Dewey's wife, as a consultant to the film for $10,000, which was significantly more than the average income of a U.S. family in 1965. And that's really one of any number of you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back.
Truman Capote's In Cold Blood is regarded in some ways as the urtext for the new journalism. First of all, how did its inaccuracies hurt the people involved? And second of all, why didn't they come forward?
You know, if you live in Garden City, Kansas, how do you fight back against a book that the entire literary world is embracing and throwing parties for? The clearest example of how Capote's methods affected the people involved is Dwayne West, the man who prosecuted the killers, treated Capote the same as he treated all other journalists, which is he gave nobody any special access. And Capote very much punished Dwayne West. He mischaracterized him in the book as the assistant prosecutor. He essentially gave Dwayne West a demotion and called Dwayne West a 28-year-old who looks 40 and sometimes 50.
But why did it take primary documents to uncover this when anyone could have stepped forward in the past decades and say, this just isn't how it happened?
I think people have tried to. Look at Lance Armstrong. How many people came forth in the last 12 years and offered eyewitness testimony that Lance Armstrong had doped? And
you're not comparing Lance Armstrong to Truman Capote.
Yeah, I think there is a similarity. There's a myth. I wanted to believe that Lance had cleanly won 7 Tour de France titles. I wanted to believe that Truman Capote had produced the greatest piece of nonfiction ever while hewing to the facts. I mean, even when my story ran, I received emails from people who say that they don't care what the documents show, that it's the greatest piece of nonfiction ever.
What's the really important thing that people should realize about this? Is it about the process? Is it about the story? What should people take away from it?
When you look at how A, Capote was willing to bend facts whenever it suited him, and B, the way that he rewarded those who cooperated with him and punished those who didn't. The biggest question about In Cold Blood will never be known, and that is, how accurately did he portray the relationship between Dick Hickok and Perry Smith, and how accurate is the enormous part of the book that deals only with those two, that is sourced only by those two, and whose truth we can never know because he waited until after those two were executed to produce the book. Now, there's an irony that is central to the book that Capote loved, which is that the killer, the man who actually shot the Clutters, Perry Smith, was deep and sensitive and lovable, and that the other guy, Dick Hickok, was just a petty criminal.
Okay. What's the matter? We're the matter. We're ridiculous. You tap into walls for a safe that isn't there. Tap, tap, tapping like some nutty woodpecker. And me, crawling around on the floor with my legs on fire. And all to steal a kid's silver dollar.
My question is, did Capote shape those characters to suit this narrative of his that the killer was the good guy and that the other guy was an unredeemable hood?
Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kevin Helliker is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal.